Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with FAA Chief Operating Officer Russell Chu. Also joining us in our conversation is Pete Boyer. Russ, in the last segment, we spoke a lot about the significant changes going on over at ATO, specifically the organizational changes. Can you be more specific and describe some of those to us?
Sure. I mean, organizationally, splitting the lines of business into things that made sense from a customer point of view was the first step, because most government organizations tend to be organized in what we do. You'd have a section on weather, you'd have a section on traffic, you'd have a section on procurement. And moving those and merging those in a sense so that they were oriented along very specific output was an important part. And that's still actually very hard for them to understand. For instance, a terminal or a control tower or a terminal radar control facility is really more about throughput to and from an airport. And so you would measure their performance in terms of the number of operations, takeoffs and landings per hour. En route, which manages the upper airspace, is more about how much controlled flight hours that you can produce per person or for so many dollars. And so the actual metric that you use to measure their performance is different. Another one was flight service. Flight service used to be kind of buried as a sub-organization on a geographic basis under an air traffic control center, which managed upper airspace. Well, those services were very different. They provided weather briefings, weather reports, advisories to general aviation pilots and some corporate pilots and some military pilots as they flew over that airspace or landed at an airport that didn't have a control tower but had some flight service personnel there. And so they had a very different type of output, which is the quality of the weather briefing, how many weather briefings an hour that you were able to disseminate, electronic dissemination of that kind of information, processing of flight plans from general aviation on an electronic way or a manual process. And flight service was particularly problematic because being kind of a lower priority for an en route center, their facilities suffered more, their staffing suffered more, their equipment and technology was suffering a lot.
Russ, much like the rest of the federal government, I would imagine that the FAA is facing potential turnover problems with its air traffic controllers, perhaps as an aging workforce issue or for a variety of other issues. What is your human capital strategy to address this expected turnover in the workforce?
Well, yeah, actually, this problem has been approaching for some time. It's pretty well known that in 1981, all the air traffic controllers were fired by the President of the United States. Back then, they were represented by a union called PATCO, I think it was. Following that, a lot of new people were hired. And, of course, they were hired all around the same age because there were age restrictions on the hiring of air traffic controllers. And so we're facing a wave of retirements in our air traffic control work group and also our technicians, not as much, but our technicians that keep all the infrastructure running. And that wave of air traffic control retirements that are on the horizon, because there is a mandatory retirement age for controllers, is here now. And even though we've known it for some time that it was coming, because it's not run like a business but is run on a reactive basis, they would hire as many as the budget would allow. So what we set out to do was create a workforce plan. And the first thing you have to do is actually create a workforce model that has a lot of fidelity to it, that they can estimate with some degree of accuracy the number of retirements, where they're going to occur, and be able to be updated on an ongoing basis. So it has to be a dynamic model. So we set out to do that the very first year that we started the ATO, and last December produced the first workforce plan for controllers. And it's very important because it projects retirements out for the next 10 years. And what you find out is more than half, or actually about over 70% of the controllers will actually become eligible to retire in the next 10 years. So you have a very, very important task to take on, which is how do you get controllers hired, trained and certified to replace those who are going to retire. And it's a very, very specific skill you need to train to and a talent that they have to have. And so your screening processes, your recruitment processes are all part of that plan. For us, the plan includes having to train to certification in a terminal in 2 years and in a radar en route facility in 3 years. And that's very challenging for us because in the past it's taken longer than that. So we have to apply better training disciplines around how we train and how we certify and how we get them the experience they need so that they can be certified in that amount of time. And for us, that's very important. Otherwise, we'll end up with too many trainees in a facility and not enough certified people. And then we'll have to slow the traffic down so that we don't have any kind of problems with the quality of our service.
Russ, on a related topic, we understand the FAA has outsourced the automated flight service stations. Could you describe this for our listeners? And specifically, what has been your experience with competitive sourcing and what have been the results to date?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things that surround this. And there's a lot of myth versus reality on what outsourcing means to any government agency. The FAA actually for years has outsourced many things, right? I mean, we don't own our own telephone lines and things. And over the course of time have established certain efficiencies by sourcing competitively different service infrastructure things that we have going on. But the reason this one was so visible was because this was one of the services that the outside customer actually wants. And very visibly we deliver. And this was the weather briefings that I mentioned that we created its own line of business. And so once you create your own line of business and you understand those costs, the outside world looks at it and says, well, why is that so expensive for that kind of service that you're giving us? And hence the focus on A76. Now, oddly enough, it began long before the air traffic organization was actually established. This notion that this was a service that even could be considered in a competitive sourcing. We would still control the service, but rather than delivering it with our own people, we would have and hold a contractor potentially accountable for it. And you run a competition. You run a competition by forming your own internal bidder, what we call the most efficient organization. So we try to compete against the outside bidders and see whether or not we can do a better job, as good a job as an outside bidder. So the outcome of a competitive sourcing initiative is either an external source will do it better and so that you select one, or your internal organization can do it better and you get a more efficient internal organization. So there's a good outcome either way. Now, obviously, this means that you really have to be careful in what you set up as the requirements for this initiative and what kind of quality of service do you have, what kind of escalating procedures you have to remedy problems that you might have, and metrics on how you would measure the quality of the service you're providing. So we set out to do that, and the competitive sourcing was set up. We had set up a most efficient organization. And when the selection time came, the winner of the bidding process was Lockheed Martin. And not too long ago, that was actually executed. And that service today is now being provided by Lockheed Martin through us or by us, under our control. Now, we're measuring their quality of service, and the initial results are quite promising. That the average wait time on a phone call is down and the average number of drop calls is down. So the quality of the service is improving so far. The transition will take the better part of 18 months to complete. But in that time, at the end of that 18 months, the service will be virtually completely provided by Lockheed Martin with our oversight. The expected reduced costs is very significant. Over 10 years, the savings is being tracked, but the savings is expected to be over $2 billion.
Now, with this experience and these results, what advice would you give to other agencies that are considering outsourcing one of their functions of their organizations?
Take care of your people. One of the most important things you need to do is exercise all avenues you have to provide a soft landing for the employees. Now, that's difficult to do because generally speaking, the savings that you're going to get are based not just on the technology and the facilities, which in our case was getting very old, but also in a reduced number of people because you're going to be more productive. We worked very hard with Lockheed Martin to try to guarantee as many jobs for our people as we could. We put in early retirement provisions. We put in what we call priority selection processes to make sure that anyone who was being displaced by this initiative would be the first to be considered for a job that might open in the FAA, any part of the FAA, not just the air traffic organization, and will continue to provide some priority to those who, if they were to be displaced when Lockheed Martin continues to become more efficient, that any open positions we have in the FAA and the air traffic organizations for which they're qualified, that they would get priority in being reviewed for that and considered for that position. All of those things are important because if you don't, I think there'll be a lot of people, a lot of owners, and potentially even some customers who would say, "You're not, you know, this is not good and for anyone, and you ought to," and they'll try to stop it. Which, of course, there's always going to be those who try to stop it. But you know, you really can't stop progress, even if this one didn't happen. Sometime in the future, when the world passes you by that far, there's going to be a lot of demand that we spend taxpayers' dollars more efficiently. So I don't see A76 as an endpoint. It's kind of a continuous process of improvement where you can use an A76-like initiative to help improve your own efficiency, even if it's not an outside bidder who wins. The circular that A76 really describes, and we call it A76, is really competitive sourcing, has been changed over the years to try to make sure that we take care of our employees and to make sure that there are enough controls around it so that we don't arbitrarily outsource things that we really shouldn't or wouldn't be good as outsourcing alternatives. So my advice would be take care of your people, one, and two, follow the circular closely because it'll help protect you from making mistakes in the process.
That's great advice. What does the future hold for the Federal Aviation Administration? We will ask Chief Operating Officer Russell Chu to peer into his crystal ball when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.